MRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Residents, teachers, and students in Shenandoah County debate changing local schools back to their previous Confederate names. State police issue homicide charges against two former Warren County deputies in the 2022 case of a driver who died after a traffic stop. And it's a record number of vetoes and amendments from the governor. And Jeff Shapiro joins us to discuss whether he will get his way with the General Assembly. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 12th. For a third time, Shenandoah County Schools are debating controversial name changes for two county schools. WMRA's Bridget Manley reports.
The Shenandoah County School Board is again considering a move to rename Mountain View High School and Honey Run Elementary School back to their former names, Stonewall Jackson High School and Ashby Lee Elementary School. The school board changed the names in 2020 following the death of George Floyd. In 2022, the school board voted 3-3 to keep the new names. Since then, the three board members who voted in favor of keeping the new names have left the board and been replaced. At the meeting Thursday night, public comment was packed with those in favor of the possible change and those in favor of keeping the new names.
I would be ashamed to live in a county that looks backward instead of forward, that sides with a misguided nostalgia over showing compassion and justice.
I can stand here today and believe firmly that there was not an issue, one, with our school's name as Stonewall Jackson High School. It was never about hate or slavery or injustice for anyone.
A majority of the student body and faculty wish for this debate to end and for people to move on with the current names. Students, including myself, will be applying to colleges in the next few years, and incredibly controversial names like Stonewall Jackson do no good on college applications.
As a taxpayer of this county and a U.S. citizen, I am tired of all the woke individuals who are eating away at our values, our morals, our God-fearing way of life.
Glenn Ogle is a father of children at both schools. Speaking to the board, Ogle, who is black, said the Confederate flag, which Stonewall Jackson requested to be buried with, was dedicated to the Confederacy with a very specific description.
It says, as a people, we are fighting to maintain the heaven-ordained supremacy of the white man over the inferior or colored race. That's the meaning of that flag that's draped over Stonewall Jackson. That is what you want my two kids to go to every day. Fighting to maintain this legacy is a fight for white supremacy. That is the legacy of the Confederacy and will be the legacy of this county should the names be restored.
The consideration for the name reversal came from the group, the Coalition for Better Schools, which sent survey cards to residents to inquire about their support. While the group claimed that over 91% of respondents supported the name reversal, only 13% of the 8,500 surveys were returned. The cost of changing the names in 2020 was over $300,000. The request to restore the names was on the informational agenda Thursday night and will be voted on at a later date. For WMRA News, I'm Bridget Manley.
You can find this story and our previous coverage of the debate in Shenandoah County at WMRA.org. Virginia State Police have issued two new charges against two Warren County deputies in relation to an April 2022 traffic stop that resulted in an elderly driver's death. On Monday, a Warren County grand jury issued a felony count of homicide against 31-year-old Zachary Fadley and the same charge against 27-year-old Tyler Poe. State police say that during the traffic stop, the vehicle's driver, Ralph C. Ennis, age 77, of Gainesville, was assaulted by the deputies. Ennis was transported to the Winchester Medical Center for treatment of a severe head wound and died 2 weeks later. The former deputies were released on bond on Monday. Preliminary hearings for the case are tentatively set for May 31st. Last year, the Piedmont Environmental Council placed more than 6,300 acres in conservation easements across nine central Virginia counties. The Daily Progress reports that the agreements are intended to hold off construction and protect the area's natural resources. Among the protected properties is River Run Farm, which includes 15,000 feet of stream that supplies the town of Scottsville with water. The nonprofit is aiming to add an additional 100,000 acres of land to easements by 2030. To date, PEC has protected more than 440,000 acres. A statewide tax program incentivizes property owners to keep land undeveloped, but signing up and staying enrolled can be a complex process, and one couple was ensnared in that process in Albemarle County, as WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Since 1974, Virginia has had a tax relief program aimed at preserving rural lands. The Land Use Value Taxation Program allows owners in participating jurisdictions with at least 5 acres to have their property value assessed based on its use as agricultural or undeveloped land rather than at market value, so their tax bill is lower. If that sounds complicated, it is. Jen Friedel, director of the Land Use Value Assessment Program and a professor at Virginia Tech, helped break it down for me. She said every state has some version of this.
And the idea was, as we looked at jurisdictions with development pressures, with farmland disappearing, with property tax increases due to significant increases in fair market value, how do we preserve the nature of our communities, preserve the open space, preserve the forest lands, and preserve the agriculture and horticulture land?
Her office is in charge of calculating the appropriate lower-than-market rate property values, which are published every year and given to counties and cities as a guideline. There are two different ways they calculate it. One is the income approach, looking at how profitable farms usually are in that area.
So it might be that this jurisdiction, you know, they've got 2,000 acres of corn and 3,000 acres of wheat and a couple thousand acres of soybeans, whatever it is. And so then we, you know, look at the net returns of each of those crops, and then we come up with that per acre net return.
In Albemarle County, that would be, on average, less than $300 per acre. That results in a significantly lowered real estate tax bill in a place where undeveloped lots are going for an average of $27,000 per acre, based on Zillow records of recent sales. The other way Friedel's office calculates use value is the rental rate approach.
This would be what someone might, in this county, pay for rent for cropland.
Going back to Albemarle County, that would mean enrolled land is valued around $400 per acre, which is the method they use. There are currently 3,768 parcels enrolled in the program in Albemarle, totaling over 200,000 acres. The majority of them are used for cow and hay operations. The tax break was attractive to Cynthia and Lawrence Gassman, who owned rolling pasture land outside of Crozet before they sold the property last year.
The 23 acres has a pond. It has streams on three sides. And we made horse pastures and started with one horse, and then we got another horse, and then we got another horse.
The Gassmans signed up for land use value taxation under the open space category in 2016, agreeing to raise their Peruvian horses without developing the land beyond the existing 1910 farmhouse and cottage. With the help of a lawyer, they submitted an application and open space use agreement to the county. Every other year, they filled out a revalidation form that the county sent out. But when they prepared to sell the property last year, the buyers found out that the agreement had expired in 2021, even though
they went on sending us the two-year form long after the thing had expired,
leading us to believe that our open space agreement was still in effect.
With the discovery of that expiration came a bill. The county told the Gassmans they owed $17,000 for the previous 2 years' real estate taxes.
You get a rollback tax imposed if the use of the property changes, but the use of the property did not change.
They paid the bill, but also challenged it. The county assessor's office told them they would consult with the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation, and as of the airing of this story, have not made a final decision. The county's communications and public engagement manager, Abby Stumpf, said she and assessor Peter Lynch couldn't comment on any specific cases, but they did answer general questions about the program. Each open space use agreement only lasts for a period of 4 to 10 years, as determined by the landowner and county in the original application. That's what expired in 2021 for the Gassmans. The revalidation form that goes out every other year asks the landowner to certify they have a current agreement on the books. As Lynch puts it,
it's just a very complicated program. Not everybody just raises cows on a property or cuts hay on a property. So that can cause a lot of kind of questions when it comes to determining whether they are qualified to be in the program or whether a rollback is required in a specific situation.
He said his office is careful to document the circumstances that warrant rollback taxes, and if challenged, they will consider additional information from the landowner. Above him is the county's Board of Equalization, although they're only authorized to hear cases on the current year's assessment values.
They've never had an actual appeal on a rollback since I've been here in the last 9 years. Above that, the circuit court would make determinations whether the finding of rollback was appropriate or not.
The Gassmans, now retired outside of Richmond with their last remaining horse, actually their original 26-year-old mare, told me this isn't going to sink them, but it would be nice to get that $17,000 back. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can learn more about that story at WMRA.org or on the app. The Virginia Department of Health reported 16 new cases of Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, since the beginning of this year. That's already more than all the cases last year. Christopher Morris is a professor of global health at George Washington University. He says the public health response has waned since the 2022 global outbreak.
And certainly there has not been, anywhere near the push to continue vaccination and maintain education. We have less of a response because I think there was a lot of wishful thinking that was already taken care of, done and dusted.
Vaccines are available at local health departments. Well, we're still going through the long list of bills that Governor Glenn Youngkin finished signing, vetoing, and amending Monday night. One bill he approved prohibits public colleges in Virginia from withholding students' transcripts in certain situations. Delegate Betsy Carr sponsored the legislation and an earlier study on the issue.
It's an important step to making certain that our students in Virginia will be able to move into the workforce and lead productive lives for themselves and for our Commonwealth.
New federal regulations taking effect this summer also bar colleges from withholding student transcripts for credits that have already been paid for. Youngkin wants the General Assembly to vote again next year on ending tax breaks for the United Daughters of the Confederacy. WRIC reports that lawmakers voted to take away tax breaks for Virginia's division of the group, but the governor wants the General Assembly to do it again in 2025 before the state cuts off the tax benefits. Democrats criticized the governor and called it a delaying tactic. The governor also rejected a ranked choice voting bill, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Glenn Youngkin got the nomination to run as the Republican candidate for governor in a ranked choice vote at a party convention. But now he's vetoing a bill that would have clarified how the process is supposed to work in local elections. Liz White at the advocacy organization Fair Vote says the original version of the bill he vetoed would have expanded the kind of local offices that could be decided using a ranked choice election. But by the time it got to his desk, she says, it was just some language clarifying how votes are tabulated and reported to the public.
It really was just kind of a technical adjustment bill, and especially a governor who, was nominated for this office using ranked choice voting to veto the bill, saying that his concerns were about voter confusion, really was surprising.
Former Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli is now with the Election Transparency Initiative, which opposes ranked choice voting.
We viewed the bill as seeking to expand and ingratiate ranked choice voting further into Virginia, and we're happy to see the governor's veto. Of course, he was nominated using ranked choice voting, which is interesting. Makes him, in my view, a much more credible person to veto a bill like this.
Supporters of ranked choice voting say they'll be back at it next year in an effort to make sure this kind of voting is available to local governments for a variety of elections. Michael Pope.
Well, the General Assembly is parsing through the governor's many amendments and vetoes. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
A lot to get to this week in advance of the General Assembly coming back to town next week. They're going to consider all of the governor's vetoes and his amendments. Jeff Shapiro, let's start with his record number of vetoes. Youngkin now holds the record for the most number of vetoes. What are some of the most notable ones?
Remember, that's a record this year and for 3 years into his term, a record 153 this year for a record three-year total of 194. And remember, Glenn Youngkin's got a year to go. In this latest round of vetoes, among the measures rejected by the governor, one that would protect doctors and nurses from having to go to other states to face charges for purportedly conducting illegal abortions. According to this, would assume that these are states in which there are severe restrictions on the procedure. Of course, that is not the case in Virginia. Another bill rejected by the governor would create a state board. It seemed to have the potential to lower pharmaceutical rates for Virginians. The governor also rejected paid family leave. And he did indicate that he would sign the so-called skills games bills. This is the legislation that would legalize these electronic gambling machines one sees at convenience stores and filling stations. But he's proposed some rather sweeping changes first.
So we've got a record number of vetoes. We also have a record number of budget amendments. What does the governor want to do with the budget?
That's about 243 amendments to the budget. Remember, that's a two-year, $188 billion budget. As far as the Democrats are concerned, the governor wants only to transform their rewrite of the budget bill into some approximation of what he had introduced back in December. Governor also has paid particular attention to some of the fine print. My colleagues David Ress and Charlotte Woods report that the governor would strike language ending state paid abortions for severe fetal abnormalities. The dollars that the state has spent in recent years are, shall we say, nominal for something like that.
So all 140 members of the General Assembly will be returning to Richmond on April 17 for a reconvene session where they will consider all of the governor's actions. What are we expecting to happen in that one-day session?
I suspect for the most part, the budget bill that will be sent back to the governor will bear a closer resemblance to the one that the Democrats sent him back in March. Question is, what will the governor do with it then? He has options. He could allow it to become law with or without his signature, or he could veto it. That would be unprecedented, the veto of an entire state budget.
So if he does veto it, wouldn't that create the need for a special session?
Yes, it would. And presumably the Democrats would do as the speaker, Don Scott, had indicated to me, send the governor their version of the budget that was sent to him back in March, setting up yet another confrontation between a Republican governor and a Democratic-controlled legislature, but with about 2 months to go. And I think one of the big questions would be, what would Republicans do? Would they stick with the governor, or it being the downhill side of his term, and particularly Republican delegates thinking about running on a ticket led by someone other than Glenn Youngkin, would they support Democrats in a veto override attempt?
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
And finally today, prosecutors say there could be additional criminal charges related to last year's shooting of a Newport News teacher by a six-year-old student. This comes after a former school administrator was indicted for ignoring warnings about the armed student. WHRO's Ryan Murphy has more.
Newport News Commonwealth's attorney Howard Gwynn says anyone who read the grand jury report on the Richneck Elementary shooting should be troubled and disturbed.
The lapses in security were appalling and should never have happened.
Gwynn says the grand jury's work is done, but his office is continuing its investigation, including into missing school documents related to the student. The grand jury report says some of the documents were found in the possession of a school district official, Lakeish Parrott. She told the grand jury she couldn't recall how she got them. The report calls that suspicious and questions whether Parrott should be charged with obstruction of justice. Parrott so far has not been charged.
Ryan Murphy reporting for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.